Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Mac Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello. Do you recognize this voice? It's been a while.
It has been a while.
But I am back.
We almost replaced you.
And better than ever. You could not.
But exactly.
Because I would have cried. Well, and that would have made you feel bad.
Not even that. How could we replace
you? Exactly. Irreplaceable, says the third co-host of the show.
But now you're getting close, though, to being the longest tenured.
I know. That's why I kept being like, please don't get rid of me. I took a little break, little hiatus, you know, getting things back. Girls are in school. Everything is happening. Busy.
You would not believe the number of complaints that we got that you weren't here. And worse, when I didn't have a guest and it was just me.
Right.
I did two shows just by myself, and you'll never guess what I did. I just played TV theme songs.
Oh, fun. And you so wanted to sing along, didn't you?
I kind of did.
Yeah.
And I didn't just do it once. I did it twice.
Oh, my gosh.
There were two episodes.
Okay.
But they had themes. For me, it was fun, but obviously nobody else had fun.
Well.
One was they were all shows with numbers in them. Like three is company, eight is enough.
Yeah.
And I didn't reveal what it was till the next week.
Oh, that's so fun.
And then the next week I did Iconic Cars.
Oh, the TV shows?
TV shows with cars, like Knight Rider.
Okay, got it.
I almost did Chips, but I didn't have enough time. Like the A-Team, the big van.
Did you do Brady Bunch for the other one? No, because there's no number. Four, okay.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I'd have to think about it all.
Maybe we should do that show sometime.
We could go back and listen on KMUN.org on their podcasts.
They might have banned those two episodes just because they were so bad. And with no guest.
Yeah. So. Do you want me to do my little trivia?
Yeah, let's do it.
I have these are the common phrases and where they came from. So this phrase is, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, which we sometimes leave that part off.
I'm going to believe that the origin of that is exactly what it sounds like, that there were rules when you were in Rome, you know, if you were going to go speak to the emperor or something like that. But I assume I'm like way off and it's something that happened that started being used in like 1900 or something.
I don't have a date, but one of the first great men in history to recognize the social value of majority rule was the famous churchman, St. Augustine. When St. Augustine dispatched St. Ambrose from Milan to Rome, Ambrose was perplexed about the proper day on which to fast, for in Rome, it was then the custom to fast on Saturday. He asked St. Augustine which day to observe. The learned Augustine remarked, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Because these words of St. Augustine were both wise and practical, they have become one of the world's most noblest phrases.
All right.
When in Rome.
So I was dead on.
Right.
I have no idea.
I mean, I almost picture him too, like rolling his eyes at this. Like,
probably.
Dude. When you're there, you fast. Like,
yes.
You do it when they fast. You don't do it on the day that they're all eating.
Well, now, what day do you fast? I fast on Saturdays as well.
I have breakfast every
day.
I break
that
the fast.
That's excellent. Okay, we got Talking Tombstones coming up on October 26th. It's always the last Sunday. And it's sponsored by Vancouver Granite Works. I should give a huge shout out to them because they have continued that from Russ War when he owned Astoria Granite Works, was the very first sponsor, and he said, you got me for life. And then when he sold the business.
And then he sold it.
it was many years.
Yes.
And then Vancouver Granite Works has continued to do that.
That's great.
So for all your tombstone needs, it feels a little weird like saying that. Like it's a good thing, but honestly, they're a nice company.
Yes.
So that's from 1 o'clock, and it's this year. It's going to be at Clatsop Plains.
Where's the...
That's the one in front of Camp Rylia.
Oh, okay.
Pioneer Cemetery. We've been there only twice before.
Really?
Yeah.
This
is the 20th year.
Fun fact, when I was little, my parents lived at Kelleby Lake when my brother and I were little. We had our Easter egg hunt there.
Oh, my gosh.
And my parents always said it was really cute because, you know, we were just wobbling around the cemetery and You know, but I mean, there's some old tombstones.
That is a very old cemetery, yes.
So,
and in fact, I believe it is a closed cemetery that you have to have a relative at this point.
Okay. Well, it's tiny. Okay.
It's not a big one. I mean, it's not as small as the one we went the first year, the Pioneer Cemetery up on the hill in Astoria.
Okay.
That one we truly have outgrown.
Okay.
And this was tough, you know, choosing the different stories to try and get some distance between people.
Oh,
but,
yeah,
there were some stories we wanted to tell.
That's
neat. One that ties in with the Astoria Column that is celebrating 100 years next year.
Oh, so we'll have to,
that's one of the reasons we decided to go out there.
Have to go to Talking Tombstones.
Yeah, and then this is the third year we've done the Selig Award to a young filmmaker. And that's we'll talk more about that in a future show. But that is on November 14th at the Liberty Theater. It's free. We'll see some movies that have been made by some young filmmakers, and we'll give out an award and a little stipend to somebody we think has a bright future in filmmaking.
And is there a meet and greet or Q&A with
that? Q&A afterwards, But then something we're doing new the next day on Saturday the 15th, and we'll have more details. I don't have any details right now, so check in with us. We're going to do a film camp. Some of the young filmmakers that we've been working with are going to come in to the Heritage Museum. They're going to do a little filmmaking themselves, and then we'll invite probably about 20 people from the community. We're still trying to figure out the age dynamics here,
sure.
So that's why I can't say anything more. And they'll work with these kids from outside the frame, this organization that we've been working with in Portland.
I love it.
The young filmmakers will become the educators to our own local young
filmmakers. I hope you include some high schoolers, because I know you could go high school to 99, but...
Yeah, we're trying to decide, you know, is it middle school, is it high school, is it just middle school, is it just high school, what age? So we'll have more next week or the week after.
Here. All right.
But it'll probably only be 20. And they'll run around the film museum or the Heritage Museum. We'll let them go to the basement, the jail cell where we are right now, and up to the attic, and they'll figure out what kind of story they want to tell, and they'll break down into little groups, and they'll do some filming.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah. All right, but we got the history highlights. You ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
All right, so these are things that, of course, in case you've forgotten, that happened tomorrow. They're icebreakers.
What have I done on my Mondays? Yeah. I've done nothing. I've had no trivia.
Yeah, what have you? You've had nothing to talk about. So these are things that happened on October 20th, 1774. The American Continental Congress passes the Articles of Association. Now, why I like this one, they included a ban on all trade with Britain until our grievances were met. Okay, that seems reasonable, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Article 8 specifically states that the colonies would promote economy, frugality, and industry. Still with me?
Yeah, I'm still there. It's good.
And discourage all species of extravagance and dissipation, including horse racing, gaming, cockfighting, exhibitions of shows, plays, and other expensive diversions and entertainment.
Oh.
This ban placed theater on the same moral plane as gambling or animal fighting.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, on many across history, that's happened, right? I mean...
It makes sense when you stop to think about it, but it just struck me as very funny.
It's awful. Yeah, it's terrible.
No theater because we're mad at Britain.
Yeah.
All right. 1803, the U.S. Senate ratifies Louisiana Purchase.
Okay. It's a good purchase.
But remember, folks, not us. It ends at the Rocky Mountains. California, Oregon, Washington, all up for grabs still. All right. 1818, U.S. and Britain agree to joint control of the Oregon country.
Okay.
We've talked about this on the show.
Mm-hmm.
1931, Mickey Mantle is born for you baseball fans. 1944, General MacArthur returns to the Philippines.
Oh.
I shall return. And he did. All right, 1967, the mythical ape-man Bigfoot is filmed in Northern California. The famous footage?
Oh, the original. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
So that was on this date in 1967.
Never to be seen since.
Never to be seen since. And is it Bigfoot or the Bigfoot? Or a Bigfoot.
Is it a name?
I don't know.
Is
it a species? Because I kind of like just referring to him as the Bigfoot. It makes me laugh to say the. I don't know. All right. Or Big Feet.
Right.
Okay. 1968. People are very glad you're back, but it's not helping any, is it? Because I'm still talking.
You still go down that those holes.
1968. Dick Fosbury sets the Olympic high jump record.
Ooh, I want to learn more about that.
We are going to learn more about it because he's an Oregonian.
That's what makes it exciting.
All right, 2011, Libyan dictator Muammar al-Qaddafi is killed.
Yeah.
All right, but our history highlight of the day, thing I think had the most impact, 1973. Watergate special prosecutor is dismissed in the so-called Saturday Night Massacre. Solicitor General Robert Bork, remember that guy, dismisses Watergate's special prosecutor, Archibald Cox, Attorney General Richardson, and Deputy Attorney General Ruckenshaus resign in protest. Collectively, the dismissals and resignations become known as the Saturday Night Massacre. Because they wouldn't do what Nixon wanted
right.
them to do.
I was going to say, and we've solved that separation of power since then. But
the special counsel is allowed to do whatever they want, and the Attorney General won't step in.
So. That's a good one. We should we should do a deeper dive and kind of remind people. I think people need a reminder of history like that too. Like what happens, why that we have some of these checks and balances.
And that's what disappoints me about this. Nixon is, he probably maybe knew something was going to happen, but there's really no proof of that. And without proof, you can't hang somebody out to dry. But what he did do is he tried to cover it up.
Right.
He could have let all these guys instantly, hey.
Just try.
You shouldn't have done this. And then, you're all going to jail. But he tried to protect them. And that was his crime, at least to me, in my interpretation of everything that happened. He's not the guy going, all right, let's plan on this Watergate thing. Let's break in. He's trying to win an election, and his people around him don't have a lot of scruples.
Well,
we can break in.
And, his ethics and moral high ground also was at a different level than some of us do.
Yeah. Right. But I think people misinterpret that, he's the mastermind and trying to do all this dirty work. And at the end of the day, it's really he's just trying to protect his own guys instead of going, I can't associate with you guys anymore.
Right.
So anyway, that's the history of Hollywood today, 1973. On this date, the Great Saturday Night Massacre.
Yeah. Well, good.
All right. So you wanted to learn more about this guy. So we're going to learn more about this guy because I want to learn more about him. And any track people that are listening may already kind of know this story. But Richard Douglas Fosbury, he lived from 1947 until 2023, March 12th.
Yeah.
He just passed away.
Just after his birthday.
Was an American high jumper who is considered one of the most influential athletes in the history of track and field. He won a gold medal at the 1968 Summer Olympics. And that's when he set the world record, revolutionizing the high jump event with a back first technique. And I had to, when I was learning about this, I had to look at up pictures so I could truly understand. So it might be a little hard for us to describe.
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out the front first.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll get to it.
Okay.
With a back first technique now known as the Fosbury Flop.
Yeah.
All right. He's got the perfect name too. His method was to sprint diagonally towards the bar, then curve and leap backward over it, which gave him a much lower center of mass in flight than traditional techniques. Debbie Brill was developing her similar Brill Bend around the same time. This approach has seen nearly universal adoption since Fosbury's performance in Mexico. Though he never returned to the Olympics, Fosbury continued to be involved in athletics, after retirement and served on the executive board of the World Olympians Association.
Okay, let's learn a little bit more about his athletic career. He was born in Portland, Oregon. Fosbury started experimenting with a new high jumping technique at age 16 while attending Medford High School. Fosbury had difficulty competing using the dominant high jumping techniques of the period. In his second year, he failed to complete jumps of 5 feet, the qualifying height for many high school track meets. This dominant technique, the straddle method, was a complex motion where an athlete went over the high jump bar facing down and lifted their legs individually over the bar. Fosbury found it difficult to coordinate all the motions involved in the straddle method, so he began to experiment with other ways of doing the high jump. Fosbury later recalled, "I knew I had to change my body position, and that's where it started that first revolution, and over the next 2 years, the evolution. At first, he tried to use a technique known as the upright scissors method. In this method, a jumper runs upward towards the bar facing forward, and during their jump, lifts their straight legs one at a time over the bar. High jump rules stipulate that only competitors competitors must jump off 1 foot at takeoff. There's no rule governing how a competitor crosses the bar, so long as they go over it."
See, that kind of makes sense. Like, okay, we don't care. As long as you're not using spring chairs,
right,
shoes or something. All right. So as he began to experiment with this technique, he gradually adapted to make himself more comfortable and to get more height out of it. Nonetheless, it was nowhere near as coordinated as a well-performed straddle method jump. And one historian has referred to Fosbury's early attempts as a airborne seizure.
Wow. That's how it looks.
It must have seemed so strange. However, during the latter part of his second year and the beginning of his junior year, this is all high school still, it started to produce results, and he gradually was able to clear higher jumps. Gradually, Fosbury shifted his positioning during the jump such that by his senior year, he'd begun to go over the bar backward, head first, curving his body over the bar and kicking his legs up in the air at the end of the jump. This required him to land on his back, but prior to his junior year, his high school had replaced its wood chip landing pit with a softer material, so he was able to land safely.
That
Can you imagine?
Awful.
Doesn't it?
Yes. Luckily for Fosbury, replacement of those landing surfaces with foam rubber was becoming common across the United States in the early 1960s. Sawdust, sand, or wood chip surfaces had been usable previously because jumpers using the scissors technique were able to clear the bar while upright and then land on their feet. And those using the Western roll or straddle made a three-point landing on their hands and legs. In the late 1950s, U.S. colleges began to use the bundles of soft foam rubber, usually held together by a mesh net. These bundles were not only much softer, but raised the landing height about 3 feet off the ground. By the early 1960s, U.S. high schools were following the lead of colleges in acquiring foam rubber landing pits. With the softer, elevated landing surface, Fosbury was able to land safely. Fosbury did, however, compress a couple of vertebrae in the mid-1960s because not all high schools could afford the upgraded foam material. He did recover from this injury. Fosbury's coaches at first encouraged him to continue practicing the straddle method, but they abandoned that idea when his marks continued to improve. In his junior year, he broke his high school record with a 6'3" in jump. The next year took second in state with a 6'5.5" in jump. The technique gained the name Fosbury Flop when in 1964, the Medford Mail Tribune ran a photo captioned Fosbury Flops over bar. While an accompanying article, a reporter wrote that he looked like a fish flopping in a boat. Others were even less kind, with one newspaper captioning his photograph, "World's Laziest High Jumper."
That's so funny, and yet he's setting records.
Right, yeah.
So in college, after graduating from Medford High School in 1965, he enrolled at Oregon State University in Corvallis.
Well.
There we go. So Oregon's own. The school's coach, Bernie Wagner, believed that Fosbury would eventually achieve greater results using the Western roll and convinced him to continue practicing the old technique through his first year. Although he was allowed to use the flop in freshman meets, the debate over technique ended during Fosbury's second year, however, when he cleared 6'10" in his first meet of the season, shattering the school record.
It's pretty nice of him to agree to try,
yeah,
like, I guess.
All right,
like,
I guess.
When he knows he's doing better.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That, okay, coach, but yeah. You're wrong.
Yeah, 6'10". I'm
doing good things here. So Fosbury actually later recalls, after the meet, Bernie came up to me and said, "That's enough. That was the end of plan A, on to plan B, let's stick with it." He would study what I was doing, film it, and even start to try to experiment and teach it to the younger jumpers. The national sports media began to take notice of the jumper from Oregon with the unusual style. He was on the cover of Track and Field News in February 1968. Fosbury won the 1968 National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NCAA, title using his new technique, the first of two consecutive titles, as well as the United States Olympic trials.
Wow. Fosbury continued to refine his technique, developing a curved J-shaped approach run. This allowed him to increase his speed while the final curved steps served to rotate his hips. As his speed increased, so did his elevation. Fosbury made little to no use of his arms at takeoff, failing to pump them upwards, keeping them down close to his body. The next generation of floppers would add an arm pump. Fosbury's key discovery was the need to adjust his point at takeoff as the bar was raised. His flight through the air described as a parabola. As the bar went up in height, he needed more flight time so that the top of his arc was achieved as his hips passed over the bar. To increase flight time, Fosbury moved his takeoff further and further away from the bar and the pit. By way of comparison, classic straddle jumpers plant their takeoff foot in the same place every time, less than 1 foot away from a line parallel with the bar. Photographs of Fosbury attempting heights above 7 feet show him taking off nearly 4 feet out from the bar.
Okay, so obviously I am not a track and field guy.
Yeah.
I am not a jumper. I'm not a runner of any kind. But it makes sense to me that you would want to start further away and get that momentum rather than trying to go straight up.
Right.
It seems like go at an angle.
It seems so hard. Yeah. In that 1968 outdoor season, Fosbury won the Pac-8 conference. Remember that? Pac-8?
Oh, yeah.
title, and he went on to win the NCAA championship at Berkeley, California in mid-June with a jump of 7 feet, 2.5 inches. He duplicated those wins the following year. Fresh off the NCAA win in mid-June, Fosbury went on to win the U.S. Olympic trials 2 weeks later in L.A. with a jump of 7'1". Despite the win, his place on the Olympic team was not assured because the U.S. Olympic Committee was worried that the results at sea level, Los Angeles, might not be replicated at the high altitude in Mexico City. Another competition was held in September at the Olympic camp at Echo Summit near South Lake Tahoe, California. At that competition, Fosbury was one of four men to clear 7'1 7/8". But he was in fourth place because of misses. The bar was raised to 7'2 5/8", a height none of the four had ever cleared. However, Olympic veteran Ed Carruthers, high schooler Ronaldo Brown, and Fosbury all cleared on their first attempts. When the fourth man, John Hartfield, another high schooler who had been leading the competition, missed all three of his attempts, the Olympic team of three jumpers was set.
So there we go. We're off to the Olympics.
So don't you think they'd think about the elevation thing first?
You would think. And I would almost, I mean, now I'm only basing this on baseball, but when the Colorado Rockies were formed in Denver, the fear was all the baseballs were going to fly out because of the thinner air, and that has proven true. So, I mean, maybe, yeah. Obviously runners and things, breathing
right.
is trouble.
Well, it just sounds like very expensive. You had two trials.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of strange. But at the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City, Fosbury took the gold medal and set a new Olympic record at 7'4 1/4".
Wow.
Displaying the potential of the new technique. Despite the initial skeptical reactions from the high jumping community, the Fosbury flop quickly gained acceptance. In the finals competition, only three jumpers cleared 7'2 5/8", and Fosbury was in the lead by virtue of having cleared every height on his first attempt.
Wow.
At the next height, 7'3 3/8", Fosbury again cleared the bar on his first attempt. His teammate, Ed Carruthers, cleared, and I wonder, I got to check in Carruthers because right. that's a name locally.
Yeah.
That would be odd. Ed Carruthers cleared on his second effort, while Valentin Gavrilov of the Soviet Union missed on all three attempts and earned the bronze medal third place. The bar was raised to 7'4 1/4", which would be a new Olympic and United States records. Fosbury missed on his first two attempts, but cleared on his third, while Carruthers missed on all three of his attempts. Having won the gold medal and broken the American record, Fosbury asked the bar to be raised to 7 feet.
No way.
6 1/8" for his final three attempts, hoping to break Valery Brommel's 5-year-old record, world record of 7'5 3/4". All three attempts were unsuccessful.
I was going to say, dude, just let it.
Just let it go.
You
won
just
the gold.
Won.
You crushed it.
Save something.
Yeah.
For next year.
You got greedy.
At the next Olympics in 1972 at Munich, 28 of the 40 competitors used Fosbury's technique.
Isn't that amazing? 4 years later, everyone's doing it.
Although gold medalist Juri Tarmach used the straddle technique. In the women's events, the winner Ulrike Mayfarth used Fosbury's technique. And by 1980, 13 of 16 Olympic finalists used it. Of the 36 Olympic medalists in the event from 1972 to 2000, 34 used the flop, making it the most popular technique in high jumping. He was inducted into the National Track and Field Hall of Fame in 1981. 1988, Fosbury competed in the Masters Outdoor Nike World Games and taught at the jump clinic held during the meet. In 2013, Fosbury's high jump appeared in a Mazda commercial portraying game changers and with Fosbury himself in an ad for Wacky TV. In 2020, Super Rest Sports included Fosbury in a list of the greatest Pac-12 male track and field athletes of all time, naming him the best ever at Oregon State University.
All right.
Go Beavs.
Go Beavs.
Yeah, so, not the track and field school. I know. Little asterisk there. You missed one.
But isn't that amazing that just Oregon has such a place in track and field history?
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So after the national anthem during his Olympic medal ceremony, Fosbury stated that he raised his fist in solidarity with the earlier civil rights protest at the games. This is 1968.
Wow.
After returning to Oregon State University, Fosbury also stood up for a black football player who was removed from the school team after refusing to shave his facial hair.
Mm.
In Hall, the fall of 2014, Fosbury unsuccessfully ran as a Democrat for a seat in the Idaho House of Representatives against incumbent Republican Representative Steve Miller. In January of 2019, Fosbury succeeded Larry Schoen as Blaine County Commissioner in Idaho.
So we finally got in politics.
Yeah. And then in his personal life, Fosbury graduated from Oregon State University in 72 with a degree in civil engineering.
Nice.
I don't know why that just seems...
It totally makes sense, though.
Sports, medicine, engineering, it does.
Well, yes. It does with the fact that he could look at that like a math equation. You know, how far out do you go?
Okay, that does make sense. When I first read that, I was like, okay, why isn't he in sports?
And something? The fact that he felt comfortable trying it, too, whereas yeah. I think you and I would just be like,
yeah,
coach, so, what's going to get me higher?
True. Okay, so a degree in civil engineering and was the co-owner of Galena Engineering, Inc. in Ketchum, Idaho, where he lived from 1977. To March of 2008. Fosbury was diagnosed with stage 1 lymphoma. He had surgery a month later to remove a cancerous tumor engulfing his lower vertebrae. I wonder if it had anything to do with that accident. Due to concerns about the tumor's proximity to the spine, it was not completely removed and he was put on a chemotherapy regime. In March of 2009, Fosbury announced that he was in remission. But in March of 2014, he stated in an interview with the Corvallis Gazette Times that he was doing well and was clear of cancer.
It's amazing. Fosbury was a member of the Champions for Peace Club, a group of 54 famous elite athletes committed to serving peace in the world through sport, created by Peace and Sport, a Monaco-based international organization. Fosbury, along with fellow Olympians Gary Hall and Ann Cribbs, was a founder of World Fit, a nonprofit organization that promotes youth fitness programs and Olympic ideals. Fosbury died on March 12, 2023, age 76, after a short bout with a reoccurrence of lymphoma. He was survived by his wife, Robin.
I kind of want to know even more about him.
I want to know,
and this probably would have been easily checked, had I thought to check before we came on the air. Do people still call it the Fosbury Flop?
They must, right?
If you are a jumper, are you aware this is the guy that created this technique that you're using?
I mean, since it sounds like there's only like less than a handful of techniques, right? Yeah, we're really showing our lack of track and field knowledge here. So I want to do a deeper dive. This is going to go on the list of Debbie Brill.
Oh,
Brill move. Yeah, so she was named in that one little sentence. But it makes me wonder because, as we've often discussed, men do kind of bubble to the surface when we talk about historic events because of the way that we write history and track it and document it.
Yeah.
But it sounds like she, too, was working on... Sounds like the same thing.
And where was she? And was she killing it? And just nobody cared because it was a small school.
I'm curious.
And
yeah,
she was a woman, or was it at some prominent place as well?
Obviously prominent enough that her name was mentioned, right? So we know that he's famous because he did make it to the Olympics, and he did, was very successful. But so stay tuned, folks, because we're gonna look up Debbie Brill, and if we find anything, we'll let you know.
We ought to have a whole show of just little follow-ups.
I know. I have my list now because we talk about this all the time, but I do have the list.
Because you're organized.
Yes.
All right. So don't forget about Talking Tombstones on October 26th and the SeaLig Award. It's free. Both events are free. SeaLig Award to a young filmmaker on November 14th, and then we'll give you more details about film camp for kids on November 15th.
Sounds great. I'm all so glad to be back.
I am very glad you're back.
Yeah. Thanks for not replacing me yet.
What did I text you? I said your mic will always be here.
I love it.
All right. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.